Hello everyone and welcome to the first lecture of the Advanced Topics on Systems Development course, Spring 2017. And this is the first of the three introductory lectures, and we're going to cover two main concepts or two main topics on this first lecture. The first of the two topics is systems development in general. We're going to look at basic concepts like what is an information system, what is method engineering, what is a methodology, what is information systems development, and so on. Then we're going to look at the context of the ISD method, or information systems development method, through seven viewpoints. So what is an ISD method? And then lastly, on the first topic, we're going to take a brief look at development and operations, or DevOps in short. On the second part of this lecture, we're going to cover global information systems development. So, what is an information system? According to Stamber from 1996, information system consists of three layers. First, or the outermost, is the informal information system, and in the informal information system sense, the behavior is informal and unorganized in the information system. In other words, the informal information system is a subculture where the meanings are established, intentions understood, and beliefs formed. Additionally, commitments with responsibilities are made, altered, and discharged. Other example, or let's say a viewpoint for this outermost layer, is the human-oriented perspective. An example of this is the soft systems methodology, or SSM in short. The second layer is the formal information system. In this sense, the behavior is formalized and structured. So the bureaucracy where form and rule replace the meaning and intention established in the previous layer, or the outermost layer. Another viewpoint for this is the business process perspective. An example of the business process perspective is the business process model and notation, or BPMN, and this is one of the practical ways of, let's say, describing or formalizing the formal IS. And the innermost layer is probably what we in general think when we think of an information system, and this is the technical information system. All the actions are automated and performed by an actual computer system. So this is by scope, this is the lowest level. There are mechanisms to automate parts of the formal system or the formal information system as a whole. And this is also called the software engineering perspective. And for example, we could use rational unified process, or RUP, to formalize or describe this innermost layer. The purpose of an information system, and by this definition we have three. We have the teleological viewpoint, and from that viewpoint the purpose of an IS is to provide high quality information to satisfy the needs of users and business actions. So, in other words, the teleological viewpoint is the viewpoint or orientation for design and purpose. So the information system must have a purpose, and it is designed to do something, and by this definition satisfy the needs of users and business actions. From a functional viewpoint, the purpose of the IS is to collect, store, process, and disseminate information in a unified manner. And finally, from a structural viewpoint, the purpose of the IS is to serve the organization as a whole. And the organization consists of actors, actions, information, and facilities. All right, let's take a look at the bigger picture. What is important in terms of this, in terms of information systems development in the scope of this course? We'll look at activities, deliverables, and some examples of information processing layers to get a high-level view of what is important on this course. So, We have four layers of information processing, and we'll start from the first one, from the top. So this is, we could call this chronological development, but it's not strictly so. On the left-hand side, we have the activity, which produces something in the middle, and on the right-hand side, we have an example of the deliverables. In this case, the information processing starts from research work, and the research work can deliver us things like case studies, field studies, and theoretical constructs. And one example of these, in this case, theoretical constructs, are the methods for method engineering. And these deliverables feed directly into the next activity on the next layer, which is method engineering. So we use the theoretical constructs to engineer a method. And in this case, we deliver methods, techniques, practices, and models, such as the rational unified process, Scrum, or test-driven development. And while the deliverables on the first layer feed directly into the activity on the next layer, they also feed directly to the deliverables of the next layer. So the case studies and field studies and so on feed to the methods, techniques, practices, and models without the actual activity of method engineering. So strictly, there doesn't have to be a distinguishable activity to deliver methods, techniques, and so on. On the third level, we have the information systems development and software engineering, and of course these methods and practices such as Scrum can be used. The deliverables on the second layer can be used on the third layer to produce the applications and, for example, database schemas. An example of applications could be, for example, Corpi or a payroll system. And then, moving on to the fourth and final layer, which is the actual information system, the applications and the design concepts on the third layer feed into the information system, and while the application is obviously an essential part of the information system, it has other sides or aspects as well. And the information system delivers us things or deliverables which fulfill the purpose of the IS, and the purpose was discussed on the last slide. Three purposes: the teleological viewpoint, which was the needs of the users and business actions, and the functional viewpoint, which was to collect, store, and process information in a unified manner, and finally the structural viewpoint, to serve the organization and the actors in the organization as a whole. So, finally, those deliverables are the files, databases, reports, forms, and dialogues, and so on. So, this is the high-level view of what this course is actually about. The information systems development is in the third layer, and the method engineering is important to the obvious reasons shown in this picture. And the information system on the last level is important to the information systems development as a deliverable from the information systems development layer. All right, some crucial definitions for this course. Information systems development: the accomplishment of organizational and technical changes in information system context, or in more detail, as defined by Mauri Leppänen in 2005, ISD is a context in which the so-called 7 W's apply. So the 7 W's are the who, does what, for what, by which, where, when, and why. And the first one, or the who, is, or are, the actors, or the people. The ISD actors carry out ISD actions. So these are the who, does what, and the ISD actions mean, for example, requirements engineering, implementation on or evaluation of an information system. And next one is the for what, and these are the deliverables of the ISD. So the deliverables of the ISD can be the information system, which is a new information system or a renewed information system. The next one, the by which, W, are the facilities, by means of ISD facilities, and the facilities are, for example, methods, techniques and tools. And the next point answers to the where and when. So the where and when is in a certain organizational and spatial-temporal context. Spatial-temporal meaning something that exists in a specific spot in time and space. And finally, the why is the satisfaction of the ISD stakeholders and the ISD goals. Couple of other definitions as well. The software engineering mentioned in the previous slide is an application of systematic, disciplined, quantifiable approach to the development, operation and maintenance of software. And finally, the systems development is a generic term referring to ISD and SE both. A couple of more definitions or points. On this course, methodology and methods are different things. The methodology means the study of methods, and a method prescribes a systematic way of conducting ISD. And take note, especially when you're reading the research articles for your group work, sometimes in Northern American literature, methodology and method are used as synonyms. Another thing is that a software development framework is usually used as a synonym for a method. So if you have encountered the software development framework in non-academic contexts, it usually means the collection of reusable libraries or classes, and that is the more technical software engineering viewpoint of software development frameworks. A couple of things why to deploy a method. You might be familiar with these from previous courses. There are, according to some sources, eight reasons why to deploy a method, and the first is the knowledge to facilitate the acquisition, accumulation, use and dissemination of development knowledge. The second one is to help the management, and the third one to reduce the costs of the development process. The next two things are to improve the quality and to provide support for the development. The sixth one is to allow skill specialization and division of labor, and the seventh one is to further standardization. So we have existing standards or standardized methods, and we want to bring our experience to the table to further the standards. And the last one is the suitability of the techniques, practices and tools to help us select the right tools for the job. Since a lot of this course is about the methods of information systems development, let's take a look at seven methodical views of how to consider or view or examine the most essential facets of methods. And the first of the seven view is the historical view, which enlightens the background and experiences from the use of the method. It involves two things: the prior method engineering contexts, which basically means or answers the question of how the method has been developed, and the prior ISD contexts, which answer the question of what the method has been used for. Resulting from the ME context, the method has to include knowledge of, for example, the intentions, approaches and principles by which the method has been engineered, the method engineering actors who have been responsible for engineering of the method, and the ME actions by which the method has been engineered. So if we were to make a division between the A and B contexts, the ME and ISD context, the ME context would be the academic standpoint. So, why, by who, and for what the method has been engineered by, well, hopefully a rigorous scientific research. And the latter part, the IST contexts, answer the practical part or practical side, as opposed to the scientific or academic. And resulting from the IST contexts, the method has to include knowledge of the applications developed with the method and the experiences of using that method, the successes and failures encountered. For example, if we take Scrum, for example, as in the upcoming slide as well, the two points, the A and B, the ME context and ISD context, are as stated in the box on the lower part of the slide. So the ISD context is a large set of empirical studies on the usage of Scrum in practice, and the ME, or the scientific context, is a technical document. The second viewpoint is the application view, and it outlines where and how the method can be applied. The argument for applicability to certain kinds of development contexts should be justified with appropriate evidence, and the said evidence can be based on logical argumentation, which can be derived from the perceived match between the method and the suggested application area, or empirical experience cut from prior usages. And, for example, again, example about Scrum, according to Schaber and Sutherland in 2012, they provide empirical experience, which states that Scrum has been used to manage complex product development. The third, or generic view, provides the general understanding of the nature of the method. It highlights the assumptions and values on which the method has been built. These assumptions and values can be of technical orientation, or they can highlight technical aspects, or they can, for example, highlight the human-related aspects. And it also highlights the approaches to be applied, for example, the user-centered approach, and the main ISD principles to be followed in the target ISD contexts. These main principles can be, for example, iterative software development and design, or end-user participation, or user-centered design, and so forth. And these three things, in italics, the paradigms, approaches, and main principles, are interrelated to one another, and they can span through these three categories to one another. And example, if we take Scrum through the generic view, it means that the Scrum applies the four values of Agile Manifesto. It has five additional values of Scrum: the commitment, focus, openness, respect, and courage, and it is based on three pillars: transparency, inspection, and adaptation. And obviously, all of these things can be interrelated, and they can, in some way, can be argued that they cancel each other out, at least to some degree. The contents view reveals the conceptual contents of the method. And this means that the method is composed of concepts and conceptual constructs referring to the systems development context, as well as to some parts of the ME contexts. And the former, which means the systems development context, corresponds to the prior and target development contexts, and the latter, or the ME context, means the prior and target ME contexts. So this is strictly a conceptual view of the method, or what the method consists of. For example, in Scrum, the Scrum from the contents view contains various concepts of roles, responsibilities, activities, deliverables, events, and so on in systems development and team and project management. The fifth methodical point of view to the different methods is the structural view, and according to this view, the method is seen as a model structure of various parts. And this structure embraces, for example, the pragmatic assumptions, approaches, principles, concepts, notations, models, techniques, rules, and guidelines. And a method component, that is, what the method consists of, is a well-defined part of the method, and it can be integrated to other components to form a coherent and consistent method. And this is something that applies both in research literature and in practice. We see a method that appeals to us, for example, Scrum or test-driven development. We take components from that method which we like, or which seem applicable or suitable for our project, and we disregard the rest. And these components can be either a model, for example, an entity relationship diagram or a class diagram, or a technique, for example, a normalization technique or regression testing. And in terms of Scrum, Scrum is composed of different practices related to roles, events, and artifacts. And for example, there are different roles in Scrum, for example, the product owner, the Scrum team, Scrum master, and so forth. And the events, which could be seen as the sprints, as well as the daily Scrum meetings, sprint reviews, and sprint retrospectives. And then the artifacts. Besides the finished work from each sprint, we have the product backlogs and burn down charts and so forth. The sixth view is the presentation view, and from this point of view, the method is seen as a set of expressions presented in some languages. The language is usually natural, supported by some formal or semi-formal language, such as the unified modeling language. And the expressions in the supporting languages signify the conceptual constructs which constitute the contents of the method. So what is formalized usually represents the key concepts of the method. A formal language is defined by an abstract syntax, a concrete syntax or notation, and semantics. And for example, in case of UML, the unified modeling language consists of various different ways of depicting the system or the method. And in Scrum, the Scrum is presented through descriptions in natural language, which make up most of the Scrum method, and there are additionally diagrams and figures, such as the sprint backlog or product backlog, burn down charts, and so on. The last view is the physical view, which reveals the appearance of the method, that is, the media on which the method is made visible or functioning. And the method may appear in a paper form, such as textbooks, white papers, scientific articles, and so forth, or in an electronic form, which nowadays usually means the internet. It can be in the form of a lecture, or implemented with some computer-aided software engineering tool, which the case tools support the creation and editing of the IS models and their implementation, development process management, and process enactment. In case of Scrum, Scrum is available in the form of books, white papers, reports, blogs, videos, and so forth, and it is supported by a variety of software tools. The last topic I wanted to talk about in the first part of this lecture is DevOps. And DevOps stands for Development and Operations, or Developers and Operators. And this was called one of the major technological trends in 2014. And in the figure, you can see the usual timeline from system development to operations. And this is something that DevOps tries to fix. The problem is that the project usually ends with the first major release of the system, and then the project team disbands, and the system is, so to speak, thrown over the wall to operations. And if we, or the client, wants further changes in the system, it involves either creating a new project or work by a business as usual team. And here is one definition of DevOps, taken from a fairly recent source. DevOps is a development methodology aimed at bridging the gap between development and operations, and tries to emphasize communication and collaboration, continuous integration, which is nowadays something that DevOps is part of, and quality assurance and the delivery with automated deployment. And these are achieved by utilizing a set of development practices. So, in short, the DevOps tries to bridge the gap between development and operations. And there are four problems that DevOps tries to address. First is a poor communication between the teams, that is, again, the developers and operators. Then the manual operations, for example, manual software or new version deployment, configuration, and management. Then the performance of development and quality assurance are not supported by data, and this is one of the major problems that DevOps tries to answer. So the performance is measured by something else than actual data. And then finally, the monitoring data is not consolidated and effectively used. This means that we need to have instruments and instrumenting application to aggregate and monitor data and try to analyze it into insights of the system. It usually involves a continuous feedback loop that runs from the production environment to the start of the development cycle. And we try to, or DevOps tries to, involve a proactive detection and awareness of events in critical environments such as test environment and production environment, and try to expose the issues before they cause failures. And according to practitioners and the source from which this figure was taken or gathered, according to practitioners, it is important, especially in software as a service applications, because the development teams are increasingly placing more reliance on detection and recovery than standard quality assurance testing practices. So the elements of DevOps by which we try to address these problems are collaboration, automation, measurement, and monitoring. And the outcomes of DevOps are as follows. We have shared responsibilities, so there is one team responsible for the entire service or product. And this is so there are no strict guidelines, strict division between developers and operators. We have continuous deployment of functionality and infrastructure provisioning, so the new versions of the system in practice do not require downtime. And the operational data gathered from the different environments is used to measure performance of development. The second part of this lecture is about global information systems development. We are going to take a look at the basic concepts concerning global ISD, then different ways of forming global teams, the benefits and challenges of working globally, and then finally trying to integrate agile into global systems development. Okay, we'll start with the basic concepts of global ISD. Global software engineering means the development of a software artifact across more than one location, and the other basic concepts revolve around sourcing and shoring. And sourcing means leveraging resources, so using resources from, more than one place. Insourcing means leveraging company internal human resourcing, and outsourcing means leveraging external third-party resources. Offshoring and onshoring mean the leveraging of resources from either a different country or from the same country. And nearshoring is something in between of these two. It is leveraging resources from a neighboring country. Then these two concepts, sourcing and shoring, can be further put together to form concepts such as offshore insourcing and outsourcing, and onshore insourcing and outsourcing. There are three dimensions of measuring the global distance between the distributed teams. One is the obvious geographic distance, which is a directional measure of the effort required for one actor to visit the other in the latter's home site or the workplace. And this is not only a question of kilometers, but the ease and time of travel, and, for example, necessity for visas or permits. The next one is temporal distance, and this means the directional measure of the dislocation of in time between the two actors who wish to interact with each other. And the third one is legal distance, which is basically the dissimilarity in the rule of law between different countries, how their legal systems are different. In addition to these three dimensions, there are additional three, and first of these additionals is the socio-cultural distance, and this means the measure of an actor's understanding of another actor's values and normative practices. Examples of these might be organizational cultures, national cultures and languages, politics, individual motivations and work ethics. The second one is the technological distance, which means the dissimilarity between technologies between those two sites or two actors, like differences in the technical solutions in hardware, software, infrastructure and so on. And finally, there is the knowledge distance, which measures the difference in education and experience between the actors. Before we look at the potential benefits and challenges of global information systems development, we'll take a look at the global teams and different ways of forming those teams. Åkerfolk and others in 2005 have defined ideal development team characteristics or qualities as these five bullet points. First is that the members have rich interactions, both formal and informal, and this means that the rich interactions are within the teams and also between the teams, which might be geographically located. And also the members share a common organizational culture, which can be a challenge if the teams are from different countries with very different cultures. The team has a good coordination and effective control, and represents a good mix of required technical skills and relevant experience. And while the technical skills and the experience can be controlled obviously through job interviews or in-house training, when you put two or more teams together from different countries, then the challenges start to arise. And finally, the team is familiar with the same kind of tools and technologies which are appropriate for the project at hand. And according to this source, there are actually three ways of forming global teams. The first one is a co-located team, and in this figure on the left, the orange circle represents a team member, and a line represents intense collaboration. And collaboration in this sense means that the team members exchange complete and unambiguous information. In other words, the sender and receiver of the messages reach a common understanding. And in the figure in the middle, there is one team with three sub-teams, and each of the sub-teams have three team members. Of course, these can be varied, but this is just an example. and in the figure in the middle, the sub-teams have intense collaboration between each other. And in the figure on the right, the loosely coupled teams figure represents communication, or actually not communication, but coordination between the teams with a dotted line. And this coordination is the act of modularizing development work into tasks and integrating those tasks with organizational units so that they contribute to the overall objective. In other words, the management of dependencies between the development tasks. So co-located teams, virtual teams, and loosely coupled teams, according to this source. Okay, next we're going to take a look at the potential benefits and challenges of Global ISD, and a bit later we are going to look at a multi-case study results which show if there is actual scientific evidence to back these things up, things being benefits. The first benefit or reason for distributed development is cost advantage. In some countries it is relatively low to hire labor to do the work when compared to other countries. Another one is that there is a larger labor pool and broader skill base when you recruit people from different countries. Innovation and shared best practices. Some countries may have, well, different best practices, for example, for project management or tools or techniques, which can be shared across the globally distributed teams. Then around-the-clock working, also called follow the sun, when the first team has completed their workday and leaves the workplace for home, the other team in another country comes to work and picks up the development process. Then closer proximity to customers, maybe in case of warranty or customer service, something like that, you can be closer to the customers if you have globally distributed teams. Then relatively low costs in terms of capital expenditure and the worldwide availability of PCs and IT infrastructure. So this is basically the state of things nowadays. And then the risks and problems with international outsourcing. The cultural differences, micromanagement of remote resources. This is also the micromanagement of remote resources is tightly coupled with the loss of control and flexibility. When your teams are distributed, there is, well, simple tasks may become more difficult. Then the vendors may not have enough experience in international outsourcing, or they may not have enough technical expertise, or their skills in communication in English might not be on the level that is required. Working methods may differ, problems with communication, poor infrastructure, especially in some of the countries where the low cost of labor is present. Then changes in national policies, maybe a new law is introduced in another country which was not foreseeable and was not, well, the company didn't prepare for it. And here are some examples of general subject classes where Eastern and Western negotiators may face differences. Such things are like differences in languages, relationship building, maintaining and management, the hierarchy of the culture, both in the country in general as in the organization, the behavior, like behavior in decision making, team working, and communication, and then the behavior inside the workplace and also on the outside. Next, we are going to take a look at a multi-case study results, which show if there is scientific evidence behind the benefits of Global ISD. The the case study, the multi-case study, studied three companies, all of which HQs are in USA. The first of the companies is a company called Semicon, which is one of the big manufacturers of chips, computers, networking, and communication products, and it has sites in the USA, Ireland, India, Poland, China, and Malaysia, and it had loosely coupled teams. The second of the three companies was called Penisoft, and it offers financial services and investment resources globally. It has sites in the USA, Ireland, and India, and it had virtual teams during the study. And the third one is Digital Solutions. It is an IT service provider from desktop to mission-critical services, and it also has sites in USA, Ireland, and India, and it also had virtual teams. And this study was carried out during 2005 and 2006. The first of the 12 viewpoints was the reduced development costs, and this was partly realized, so this potential benefit in this study proved out to be something concrete. So the case study revealed that the average salaries were lower. However, the salary costs had more managerial roles, and those roles were replicated throughout the different countries. Then, on the other hand, again, there were additional coordination costs. Each of the new offshore developers needed a remote buddy to somehow coordinate the start of the work. And the study also noticed that there were delays in critical tasks due to the global teams and their collaboration. Second potential benefit was the access to a larger multi-skilled workforce, and this too was partly realized. The large populations and the GSD allowed the companies to tap into skilled workforces, including so-called genius employees. On the other hand, there were high attrition rates. Attrition rate meaning the rate on which an employee gets exhausted because of the work. There were non-critical tasks given and costly recruitment and training. Because of the larger workforce, the lack of domain knowledge was more typical, and cultural differences complicated things. The third viewpoint was leveraging the time zone effectiveness, and this had only mythical benefit, meaning that this potential benefit was not realized in this case study. The companies made effort to increase overlap in working hours by following unusual hours, so when the teams, globally distributed teams, were not in the follow the sun schedule strictly, the companies tried to increase the overlap by using unusual working hours. And the follow the sun approach required daily handoffs. So basically this means that you cannot just continue writing the application which someone else has written during the night, but it requires some kind of a handoff to see what the changes were and in what direction the work is going. And the study speculates that this is perhaps only good for debugging and support work. The fourth potential benefit was the closer proximity to the market and the customer. And this, according to the case study, this had possible benefits, so there is no concrete or unambiguous evidence one way or the other. The study speculated that the The teams or the project had better understanding of local market conditions because being on site and this was not interesting if market is at home, meaning that the, let's say, one of the companies had sites in USA, Ireland and India, but if they only sell products in the USA, this is not something that is interesting. The fifth was innovation and shared best practices, and again, this was not realized in the case study. One of the problems was limited transfer without face-to-face interaction, so the best practices and innovation were not shared in a non-face-to-face communication. And the abilities of developers in lower-wage locations tended to be underestimated, and limited sharing because of fear of losing a job to an offshore colleague. So the best practices and innovations were not eagerly shared because of these fears and preconceptions. The next possible benefit was improved resource allocation, and this actually was only of possible benefit, so no evidence to either way. Resource allocation meant that moving resources between teams to maximize utilization at each site, and this meant that the people may be brought on board the team regardless of location. And one of the insights of the study was this is only applicable with the virtual team model. The next one was improved task modularization, so divide the work into tasks. And the tasks, well, divide the tasks across independent teams to reduce the costly cross-site communication. And the idea behind this was that each site has responsibility for the whole life cycle of a particular module or particular functions. And three insights on this one. According to the study, there's a need to clearly clarify a decoupling of work at the outset, at the beginning, and when the tasks are divided into modules and modules are distributed across the sites, integration problems rise along the line when we try to couple the modules together. And one of the companies has had a policy of limiting development to no more than two locations. Next one, reduced coordination costs, and again, only possible benefit. And the idea behind this one was that the coordination costs are reduced since no direct coordination takes place when two people are not working at the same time. The developer of one work unit can complete the work during the off hours of the person who requested that work. And this, again, insights, this will only be realized if requirements are clear and if the two parties have agreed on the unit of work. What are the clear boundaries of one singular unit? And continuous temporal overlap with other sites complicates this. And the next possible benefit was increased team autonomy. The last three few viewpoints were related to communication. And the first one was formal record of communication, then improved documentation, and finally clearly defined processes. And all of these three were partly realized according to the study. And when information is documented and distributed electronically rather than discussed face-to-face, it allows for the passing on of project-specific knowledge to the next project, maybe to a different company. And on the other hand, the formal communication channels like email was seen as a problem for some of the interviewees in the case study. And one of the interviewees said, and I quote, that email is a common way of causing conflict. I think you should avoid huge email chains. Pick up the phone and talk to the person instead, unquote. So there are two points to the formal and informal communication. Finally, we are going to take a look at the global ISD in the agile context, and this table is based on a study from 2006, which studied 13 projects in 3 companies. And on the right side, we have the challenges in distributed development, like difficulties in communication, and then we have the characteristics of agile development in the middle, and related to the communication challenges, there is a lack of formal communication and increased demand for informal communication in agile development. And when you put these two things together, we have new challenges in agile distributed development on the right. So the first new challenge is the communication need versus communication impedance, and impedance meaning the opposition caused by communication differences. The second row is the lack of control, and in distributed development it is difficult to control process and quality across the distributed teams. And in agile development, the lightweight processes, ongoing negotiations and reliance on skilled people is emphasized, and that is characteristic to agile. And when you put again these aspects together, new challenges are the fixed versus evolving quality requirements, and the control, if it is whether it's people or process oriented. The last line is the lack of trust. The challenge in distributed development is the lack of trust between distributed team members and the lack of team morale. Agile, on the other hand, emphasizes the cohesive team and building trust progressively. Also, short commitment, whether it is to the projects or the sprints. Again, these two things put together result in new challenges, which are the formal against informal agreement and lack of team cohesion. And this study identified these 5 new challenges depicted on the right and tried to answer these challenges by providing some solutions, which we're going to look at on the next slide. So in this final actual slide of the lecture, we're going to look at the solutions for the 5 proposed new challenges by the same study. And the first one was the communication need versus the communication impedance. And the solution for this was to improve communication by 4 things. Using 4 things. One was the synchronized work hours, and then informal communication but through formal channels. So even though the communication is informal, the formal channels, for example, ensure that the communication is recorded and it may be shared with other projects and other teams. Then balanced coordination meaning the act of modularizing the development and integrating those development tasks with organizational units. And then constant communication, so the exchange of information between the teams. Another solution for the communication need and impedance was to facilitate knowledge sharing. So by maintaining a product or process repository and focusing on well-understood functionality rather than trying to understand critical new functionality. And then from the agile side of things, short cycle, and then from the, let's say, classical side of things, no time box development. So, for example, for a very general example, maybe use sprints, but do not dictate strictly the time of one sprint. The second new challenge was fixed versus evolving quality requirements, and this was the proposed solution for this was to trust the actors in the project, but verify the results. So, rather than having a centralized quality assurance unit, distribute the quality assurance between the teams. And another point to this was to supplement informal communication with documentation. Third new challenge was the people versus process-oriented control. So, whether to control the process according to the people's needs or according to the process needs. And by trusting but verifying the results and the development, additionally, the other solution proposed for this was to continuously adjust the process by planning iterations to finalize requirements and develop designs, and on the other hand documenting requirements at different levels of formality. And this supports the supplementing informal communication with documentation on the previous box. Fourth new challenge was the formal versus informal agreement on the, well, various aspects of the development. And the solution for this was to build trust by these three points. By frequent visits by the distributed partners, so go on site with the, well, take one work site to the other, which is geographically distributed, and focus and learn about their, well, organizational culture and mainly the people working on the project, so get to know them face to face. Then sponsor visits and building a cohesive team culture, so the teams, at least internally, should have a well-set culture of doing things, and when those teams are culturally the same or well cohesive, then we can start sharing that knowledge to the other teams which are distributed. And the final problem or challenge was the lack of team cohesion, and this also the last box and three bullets contribute or act as a proposed solution for that. Alright, this concludes the global ISD part of the lecture, and now we're going to take a look at some example topics for the essays. I have gathered here 13 example topics on the first essays, and some of them are information systems oriented and some of them are computer science oriented, and there are also research questions or problems or focuses or goals in these example topics, but what is more important to me than you sticking strictly to these topics is that you research something that is A, current, and B, you are interested in. And all of you come from different backgrounds, your major studies, minors, some of you come from work life, some of you come from different countries, and you have different views on what's to come in the information systems or computer science field. And these topics may actually serve as a preface to your master's thesis if you don't already have a topic. So keep those things in mind. Here are four information systems oriented topics: crowdsourcing information systems development, how to advance creativity in systems development, team performance in agile software engineering, and team learning in information systems development. The other information systems oriented sample topics are motivation in information systems development and trust in information systems development, and finally development and operations. Then some more computer science or technically oriented topics if you're more of a technical person. Software refactoring, software frameworks for distributed data storage, for example, different frameworks like Hadoop or Spark, and finally, energy efficient architectures. These might be of interest to you if you're interested in embedded systems or IoT. More computer science oriented example topics for the essays: game frameworks, security in auto-scaling cloud services, choosing the right software and hardware solutions in a cloud environment, and whether you are information system or computer science oriented, you can come up with your own topic and research questions or goals, but make sure you confirm them with the teachers. Thank you for your attention. Here are the references used in these slides. Good luck and have fun.